Okay, hello there, everyone. Welcome to Open Sources Guelph. You're on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. I'm Adam A. Donaldson of Guelph Politico, and joining me is...
Scotty Hertz from the CFRU News Team. Adam, have you ordered your Trump Bible yet? The God Bless the USA special. It's like, how could you not want that?
I hope it gets here on time for Easter Sunday so I can wear my Trump sneakers and take my Trump Bible to church.
Yeah.
Oh, it's going to be so great. This Easter's going to rock.
I heard it's souped up with like a constitution and the lyrics to God Bless the USA and
a rocking
time for $60 US. So you think we were getting a cut?
It's a fully loaded Bible is what it is. Oh, man.
Fine Corinthian leather cover? Probably. God bless the USA. That's all I can say.
Yeah, I'm not touching anything that Trump endorses, even if he was endorsing a cup of water, or if it was Trump water. Come to think of it, there is literally Trump water. I wouldn't take anything from Donald Trump if he was holding water and I was really thirsty from walking across the desert for 40 days and 40 nights, like someone from the Bible who Trump couldn't name. Actually, no, 40 years. No, it's his favorite book. Don't ask him to quote a passage from it, though, but that's like just too personal. Anyway, Open Sources is CFRU's political and current affairs discussion show. And you can find us here every Thursday at 5 p.m. as we talk about the latest news items from Guelph, Ontario, Canada, and around the world. And we sometimes interview local newsmakers and politicians. But this week, though, we are going to be interviewing no one from Trump world, sadly. But it will be Ward 5 City Councilor Kathy Downer, who's going to talk to us about recent developments at City Council, including this week's vote concerning political interference, heritage protections, and the possibility of a vacancy tax, and much, much more. That'll be at the bottom half of the hour. Before that, we're going to talk about a few news items from the last week, including the Ontario budget. Good news if you hate paying for car-related stuff. Bad news if you want cheaper housing, better health care, or fiscal conservatism. Fiscal conservatism. Speaking of which, first topic, we're going to axe attacks. Sorry. impression time is over. No, last week at the House of Commons, Pierre Poilievre tried to pass a resolution or a motion to get the federal government to pause the increase to the carbon tax that goes into effect on April 1st. It was not successful, which then made Poilievre put a motion of non-confidence on the floor to remove the federal liberals from power. That also failed. If this seems silly, maybe that's because it is. But on the other hand, it does seem to be successful. With the electorate, if you look at 338 Canada today, they have the Conservatives in first place with 42% support nationally. The Liberals are at 25, NDP at 19. I was looking at the seat breakdown for Ontario. If the election were to be held today, the Conservatives are likely to win 89 seats in Ontario alone, probably somewhere between 74 and 102. And before I let Scotty rip, there was a Canadian Press article that broke down sort of why people are kind of going along with the whole axe to tax thing and why Pierre Poilievre is kind of packing them in, which is very, very interesting, and I highly encourage people to read it. Essentially, people have tied the carbon tax to questions of affordability. Pierre Poilievre has been very, very successful at this, making, I guess, tying affordability to the carbon tax. And the reason why things are less affordable now is because of the carbon taxes is not necessarily true. And it's a little complicated to explain, but Scotty, if I were to sort of make the case about how and why Pierre Poilievre has been successful in this effort, it's because he has successfully tied affordability to the carbon tax and has successfully ingrained in people's minds that the reason why things are less affordable now is because of the carbon tax, even if that's not, I was going to say not entirely true, but it's also, but it's more like not entirely false, I guess, is the way to put that.
Well, it depends who you are, too. I mean, Trudeau came out on Wednesday was saying, you know, the premiers that are fighting this are lying.
Mm.
and that his numbers were like 8 out of 10 people will actually benefit from it. Now, I don't know if this fuzzy math, we haven't seen this math yet. There is some real math out there behind this. Up to and including, there was a bunch of economists, I guess, came out and said, no, this works. This is going to be a good idea, which immediately will just get slammed because Axe the Tax is catchy and it has momentum, and Polyev is just going to ride it.
Mm-hmm.
You see the numbers going up, like you mentioned at 330 or whatever, you're going to ride it. Now, I did do a little bit of calculating about just working with vehicles alone. And what prompted this was on Monday. So Stan, you probably saw this. I'm sure you did. Mm-hmm. Standing in front of two large engine pickup trucks is Doug Ford asking the government to scrap the tax. Of course, this all in the wake of the budget, which is our next topic that we're going to talk about, right? he's framing with affordability and, you know, it's going to kill everybody in Ontario. And the rhetoric is up, right? They're all all the conservative premiers and UCP, technically conservatives, doing it. But, you know, realistically, if you're paying through the nose, or you perceive you're paying through the nose for your carbon tax because your pickup truck's an 80-liter vehicle that you drive to your cubicle job, it's this kind of thing that's supposed to give you the incentive to think about that.
Mm-hmm.
You will be getting some money back. Probably not the same amount as, say, because everybody's getting that you and I would, Adam, because you don't drive vehicle at all, and I'm a super light user these days, so it's like, we'll probably benefit from it. So we must be in the 80%, I'm going to assume. Now, of course, there's all the other things, home heating oil and that, and or home heating in general, including natural gas. But, a lot of where it's not working, you don't really hear a lot of focus on it, is how many groups get exemptions to it.
Mm-hmm.
So this is how it works for the conservatives, because they're saying, okay, you're punishing Canadians, which is technically true.
Mm-hmm.
But they're also seem to be rewarding certain industries who are the worst.
Mm-hmm.
Oil, gas, chemical companies, cement, steel, mining, right? You name it. They get a break. Now, I believe that farmers should definitely get a break on certain things. And they actually do on gas and diesel. But part of the issue with it, and it's easy for them to latch onto this, is how it's inequitable, how it's not applied equally across the board. They're insisting it will play out in the wash with the rebates that everybody is going to get, supposedly. But I don't think it will.
Yeah, the Parliamentary Budget Office, that's where the 80% number comes from. 80% of people make more money from the rebate than they do pay into the carbon tax. And then they also said at the same time, 80% of people will feel an impact from the economic side of this. So in terms of like creation of jobs and creation of opportunity, 8 out of 10 people will feel that impact with essentially, if you don't get a raise and it's because your boss is paying more to the climate tax or the carbon tax, then you're not going to get a raise versus a company that may be not paying the carbon tax or in similar circumstances. So there is kind of this I hate to say both sidesism, but there is this kind of two sidesism about it, where personally you can benefit when it comes to your employment opportunities or job opportunities, maybe not. The fuzziness is what makes this so difficult. And that's where Polyev can slide in, because it's not necessarily easy to understand, or rather people understand the wrong way. People see how much money they're paying at the gas pump. People don't necessarily assign the, when they get the rebate check, assign that, okay, a portion of that is meant to cover this extra cost of the, like, people's minds don't work like that. It's the same thing with inflation. Inflation may be going down, but if I'm paying more for groceries than I did a few years ago, I feel like inflation is not going down. It's the same psychology as like when you see something that's $2.99, you think about the two and not the how it's almost $3.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's tricky. The flip side of this, too, though, is that I think the federal liberals have let the conservatives kind of own this affordability space. Because when you turn on TV, assuming you turn on the TV, assuming you're old men like me and Scotty and turn on the TV, when you see the commercials, and it's Paul Everett, he's like, he's at the table and he's looking at paper and he's thinking really hard. He's like, boy, just can't afford stuff in Canada anymore since Trudeau was prime minister. We really need some common sense. And then, you know, the government commercial is like, here's Ben. He takes the bus twice a week to reduce his carbon footprint. Here's this other couple. They're putting their laundry on the line to dry in the wind instead of using power in the dryer. And here's this other group who are retrofitting their home. And isn't this great that Canada is creating all these opportunities for you to be more environmentally friendly? The messages just don't hit the same. And what I think what the federal government, the federal liberals need to do is start phrasing this as an affordability question. It's like, you don't like paying for the carbon tax? I guarantee you are not going to like paying for climate disasters that result from doing nothing on climate change.
You were saying about the commercials there speaks to the Americanization, creeping Americanization of advertising in the political realm that we're seeing. We've seen hints of it over the years, but now it's just so blatant now. The negative ad. And the liberals, although they do say negative things at times, haven't headed that way. It's going to be interesting in the next election to see how all of that played out. When we were talking about affordability, it used to always be the realm of the NDP. Always. And I was thinking back to, and I'm not sure if you remember this, Adam, you might, I'm probably old enough, GST rebate. Is that ringing a bell?
Yep.
I was thinking back to that. I was like, oh, wow, they gave us $50 or $55. And when you're a student, you're like, yeah, great.
It's still quarterly.
Yeah. I went and got a tattoo with my first check because we used to get checks in those days. But of course, it didn't make up for the entire fee you were paying, right? And with the carbon tax, there are knock-on effects. You were saying about the price of everything. Truckers are a good example who are paying a lot more. And of course, we know that they're a target market for certain politicians. There's a difference between, I guess, being an owner-operator and working for a company, but both of them would be affected by the carbon tax. So again, it's like, who do you subsidize? You're favoring certain people. And the conservatives are riding that and saying, just get rid of it. Because it's not being applied across the board. But then I saw a clip with Polyev. I can't remember who was. He had a sit down with someone, which was shocking in itself. Media. I can see his face. It doesn't matter. On my old television, by the way, it's actually not that old, but never mind. And topic of discussion was this. And the question was, so what's your plan? And he didn't answer it. No. He just went on and on about Trudeau and on about all of this stuff. As Danielle Smith does, as Doug Ford does, as they all do. So Trudeau isn't wrong when he says they're being overly negative about this and all of that. So, yeah, it's this back and forth. And he's going to ride that to the prime ministership.
Yeah.
And this will carry on. Like, how far out are we now? Two?
Year and a half.
So getting creeping ever closer, right?
No. Your point about the American politics is interesting because, you know, having a vote to repeal the carbon tax, which is like a signature liberal legislation, and the NDP want it as well. And I think there's a pretty big constituency in the Bloc that wanted it. So it was purely performative. It was going to fail. So why do it? And it's the confidence motion, too, because the NDP aren't going to, you know, nobody wants to have an election right now, except maybe Pierre Poilievre. But so it was pure performance. And what did that remind you of? It reminded you of like the 50 or 60 votes that the Republican Congress took to repeal Obamacare while Obama was still president. Mm-hmm. And it's like, of course, he's not going to sign into law legislation that repeals his signature domestic acknowledgement. What is this for? It's performative. It's like, we're fighting for you. We're trying to get rid of this terrible tax instead of, you know, presenting alternatives. And not to encourage everyone to listen to the Guelph Politicast, but they should. But, you know, Evan Ferrari was on the show this week and he's talking about, you know, climate deniers aren't denying climate change anymore. What they're saying is we can fix it with technology. And this is kind of more of the same. It's like, we can fix it with technology. We can do stuff to stop climate change, just not a carbon tax. And before we came on, I saw this, I saw something on Twitter where Scott Moe was like, you know, we're looking at technological solutions as opposed to a carbon tax, but they're all really expensive right now. And it's like, yes, that's why you have a carbon tax, Scott. It's not rocket science. It's environmental and financial policy. But
I was going to say, as we know, Scott Moe's understanding of this is quite low. Yes. Because he said, you know, it's, well, we have the cleanest oil and gas in the world, which is a nonsense argument. It's absolute garbage. How is it cleaner? Anyway.
Well, it's also not cleaner, but I digress. No. That brings us to Ontario, where we got the 2024 budget this week. Record spending, record debt. Well, I don't know if it was a record deficit, but it was certainly not the $200 million surplus we were promised this time last year. Good news for Guelph, at least. There is $9 million over 3 years to fund the operation of the Kindle Communities project over in the Sheldale neighborhood. So that's good news, because that's one of the things that's sort of been stymieing that project, is that a lack of operating funds. So we do get that at least. More promises about the expansion of Highway 7. The Frederick Street Bridge is going to go out for tender any minute now. Also two-way all day go, but I think the biggest piece of this is that it's more about the disappointment. There just doesn't seem to be any action to address shortages on medical staff, shortages on social housing or affordable housing. We are getting a pause on the gas tax for another 6 months, which will bring that up to about $4 billion that Doug Ford has lost in revenue. Could help when you have a $9 billion deficit, but what do I know? I'm just a radio host and podcaster. I'm not a big smart business guy like Doug Ford, you know?
Yeah. Deep sigh.
Deep sigh.
I forgot to mute my mic. Sorry. Yeah. So speaking to the more performative aspects, Bethlenfalvy, buying those work boots on Monday. Like,
oh yeah,
that stuff drives me nuts. And it's,
I don't know who that's
Have you
for
seen
anymore.
That guy's hands? Like, not to judge completely, because you're talking about being in the hands of a businessman. It's like, just don't do it.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that's going to appeal to the average construction worker or trades or whatever?
He's got city hands.
He's got city. Yeah. No one believes you. So just don't. But yeah. And then they cut.
You have city hands, Mr. Bethlenfalvy. You have money all your life. Sorry.
Yeah. Not to judge too harshly, but just it's the buying of the boots is just.
Yeah. It's
and also that I was listening on the CBC and they cut him off when. And just went straight to the commentary when he did the whole, and that man was my father. And like, just please stop. That's the kind of stuff. I mean, no wonder no one, I wouldn't say no one is listening, but you know, this is why we count on good journalists in the trenches to bring the, I was going to say the good news, but not necessarily. Yeah. So this is the biggest budget that Ontario has ever seen. And of course they're going to trumpet that, right? It's going to be, this is the most money ever spent.
Mm-hmm.
We're outspending the Wynne McGinty Peterson Liberals or whoever, right? So we are just going to throw money at this stuff. But the challenge is with that stuff that you've mentioned, particularly healthcare and education. If they've added bits and pieces here and there, but if you're not keeping up with inflation, which they hate, then it's not an increase.
Right.
Or what was the one that was, it's paused for a couple of years. They're not going to increase the spending at all, but then Bethlenfalvy was like, no, it's not a freeze. It's like, if you're not adding any money to that category and accommodating for inflation, it's a freeze. Whether you like it or not, it's frozen. Mm-hmm. And actually, in some cases, can be a reduction.
Yeah.
But as you said, and that is part of the ridiculousness of this is the gas tax cut. I mean, even Daniel Smith in Alberta put the gas tax back on.
Mm-hmm.
And she's saying it's going to pay for roads. And I thought, wow, so much for that. What is that? The liberty theory that they're operational liberty or whatever they're operating on. Right. Oh, it's like, oh, we don't like taxes at all, but we need to bring this one back because we got to pay for roads. It's like, okay, we'll give you that one because that's very necessary.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, what was it? 620 in loss so far from the gas tax. It'll be $1 billion, I think, for the year, right?
Mm-hmm.
That'll stick it to those liberals. Like, are you doing these things just to, you know, make Ottawa look bad?
Mm.
So yeah, spending all of this, some spending all the place. I, of course, you know, I'm going to mention the four helicopters for the cops. It's like, have you not heard of drones? Do you not know what drones are? Drones mm-hmm. can do everything that you're thinking about, including chasing the stolen cars around, which I think there's cash in there for that as well.
Mm-hmm.
There just seem to be some weird things, too. I saw Colin DeMello was talking, and he said there was a line about electrifying all the campsites in Ontario.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say the majority of people who use campsites in Ontario don't want that. Because that karaoke machine that's for sale at Costco is going to be at every frigging campsite. Across the province. And well, the fees will go up, too. The fees will no doubt go up.
Right? I mean, my sister RVs, so that's who that's directed to. It's not like when my sister says, well, we're going camping this summer, and I'm like, you have an RV, so that's not camping, but that's neither here nor there.
Ask her what she's paying gas tax wise. I'd be interested to know that.
Okay. Yeah. It's very performative. Like $9 billion surplus. And of course, we're magically going to get to back to black just in time for the next election, which, I mean, the liberals pulled that too. This is not it's not necessarily a knock of conservative politics. But I mean, to revisit the gas tax, the carbon tax thing for a discussion, like Doug Ford can rant and rave about the carbon tax all he wants. We had a way to address the carbon tax system that didn't cost the average person a penny. We had a cap and trade system. What was one of the first things that Doug Ford got rid of? The cap and trade system.
Mm-hmm.
License fee stickers. That's $1 billion out the window. Pausing the gas tax. That's $4 billion out the window. You know, when they talk about like making life more affordable, that never includes, although they do have a plan apparently to make car insurance more affordable. I was going to say that never includes car insurance, but they're actually changing that. But even like car insurance professionals are saying, if you start letting people opt out of certain caveats and packages to make things cheaper, what you're going to get is a bunch of people who can't afford, who will like take stuff out of their car insurance packages to make it as cheap as possible, which means they won't have like decent coverage. So, I mean, even that seems like it's folly. These attempts to make things more cheap that, you know, on the one hand, yes, it is less expensive. On the other hand, it is like the pejorative definition of cheap, as I mean, it's not worth anything. So, I, you know, honestly, if electrifying campsites is the worst thing that comes out of this budget, that's probably that's probably okay. But I mean, you know, the thing with the Stonehenge funding locally, I mean, that's like a drop in the bucket of what's needed. And if you're going to have like a record breaking spending in the budget, for God's sake, actually spend on stuff. Like, it just feels like, you know, we're getting nothing for something. The something, and, you know, deficits. I mean, can we, you know, all like, can we just finally admit that all economics are voodoo economics if this is what we're doing? But it just, at the end of the day, I think that's one of the most frustrating things about this budget is that it's record spending, but everybody, like, I got press releases all night last night that was like, the government should have spent on this. The government should have spent on this. And it's like, well, how do you get to record spending when everybody's complaining that you didn't do any actual spending? That, I think, is something that we're probably going to come to understand more and more in the days to come as this budget settles more.
But surplus just in time for the next election, right?
Sure.
Guaranteed. Well, they didn't say guaranteed, but they're thinking it.
Well, I think
is everything, but what's the interest on a lot of that is interest on the debt, right? Is it 13?
Yeah.
Billion? I think that was the number I saw, 13 billion. So sure. A good that chunk of that is just money that's disappearing.
Yeah.
On the 400 billion now higher. Yeah.
But, you know, they keep taking options off the table, like the gas tax, like we're not going to put new tolls on highways. Well, there's one highway that has a toll on it right now. And maybe if other highways had tolls, you know, you could be able to spread things out a bit more. People take the 400 if every option they needed to get to Vaughan required them to pay some sort of toll. But, you know, we can't make driving more expensive. That seems to be the one thing is, you know, if cheap driving has to be as cheap as possible, taking transit or, you know, having walkable neighborhoods, that seems to be where things fall apart.
I've said this before, absolutely obsessed with cars. What was the little leak was about this insurance thing, which has just kind of fallen flat. It's kind of a who cares announcement.
Yeah.
But yeah, it is all about the cars and the vehicles. And this is why we're never going to see decent transit anywhere.
Mm.
Like, shouldn't the carbon tax money just go directly to building this high-speed rail that they've been talking about for, I don't know, 50 years?
It should.
Yeah.
But we can't even get regular rail.
regular or premium rail? Which would you like? A little pump cart, please.
that's a little train humor for all the train fans listening. We're going to take a quick break and come right back with Kathy Downer. You're listening to Open Source's Guelph. You're on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio.
And that was a band called the Utopians out of Belgium. Isn't Goldmember from Belgium?
I don't. Yes, I believe you're right.
I don't know how many ska bands are in Belgium, but there's at least one called the Utopians. The album's called Look Around You, and the song is called Don't Work. Don't want to pay your carbon tax. Don't work.
Well, I mean, it's not a bad message going into a long weekend, but hey. We are utopians. We help to make you think about death and stuff.
All right. Belgians are going to be calling.
last impression for the day. So it's been a while since we had a member city council on. And so we called up Kathy Downer, who instantaneously answered our phone calls because CFRU is in Ward 5, which is her ward. Got to work the constituents. Am I right?
You see that number, you have to pick up.
That's right. So, lots been going on at council, and we're going to get into that. There was a discussion this week, a debate around Ontario Energy Board decision that the Ontario government is trying to override through legislation. Stuff about the demolition bylaw, which led to a discussion last week about vacancy taxes and demolition by neglect. That feeds into Kathy Downer's bailiwick because she's a member of the Heritage Guelph Board. And that's almost enough to fill our interview segment this week, but we did squeeze in a couple more topics. So I don't want to spoil anything because we're going to play the interview starting right now. This is Ward 5 Councillor Kathy Downer. Okay, Kathy Downer, thank you so much for hopping on with me today.
Thank you, Adam. Always a pleasure to be here.
Why don't we start with the newest stuff first? Ontario budget went live to air, so to speak, on Tuesday afternoon. How do you feel about it? Like, how much have you got into it in terms of like what could impact Guelph and Guelphy stuff?
You know, I haven't gotten too far into it. So I've just sort of, we got a memo from our intergovernmental affairs that I had a quick look at. And, you know, the big highlight for Guelph right now is the $9 million over 3 years for the Kindle project, which is the wraparound services for people with mental health and addiction who have been living on the street. So that's great because that building will be finished in June of 2024. And like everybody was hoping we'll be able to open it because there's no point in opening it without those services. So my only concern there is it's a 3-year commitment. So then what happens? So it's not stable funding right now. And then there's in that is funding to help other increase services for another 76 individuals. I mean, we got the Delhi Street opening up later this year. So I didn't, you know, there's some infrastructure promises. I still don't really see much about making us whole from the development charges reductions. And, you know, the formula, I think you wrote about it recently, you know, the reward system, it doesn't really cut it because we got to build the infrastructure anyway. And it still means that existing taxpayers are going to have to pay that fund, whether we hit those certain targets that year or not. It's still got to be built. And remember, we were able to collect development charges. So that's still sort of a problem for us. You know, even the announcement of 4 point something million a couple of weeks ago will not address the, I think it's $11 to $12 million DC capital funding deficit from last year. So it's still not great. You know, there we'll see. And, you know, there's not a lot of healthcare funding. There's some, but not an increase. There's not an increase for people on ODSP. There's, you know, I'm other than that one part of the announcement, I'm not overly thrilled. I mean, and they've thrown away like billions in revenue.
Yeah.
The license thing and whatever else, you know, gas taxes. And
there's a real sense of whiplash, though, right? Like, And I tried to get Paul Calandra to comment on it when he came to town that, you know, on the one hand, the premier calls us like left wing, well, calls council, but I could probably get staple to that left wing lunatics.
Yeah.
And then Paul Calandra is like, you have a great team here. Like Guelph is doing great. Here's $5 million. And it's kind of the same with this Kindle community funding, because it's like for months and months and months, you know. We need funding. We need funding. We need funding for the actual operations. And then, you know, well, how about $9 million for 3 years? And, you know, there's this collegiality, this cord. It seems like they're listening. And then other times, you know, we're a bothersome nuisance, you know, that's, you know, buzzing around the premier's head.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's certainly the way it feels. And, you know, just the way they treat, I think he has a lot of disdain for municipalities just from his comments. And I don't know about Calandra, but, you know, that probably filters down somewhat. I mean, yeah, I mean, we got money there, but we don't turn down a lot of applications or many at all, really. So, and I don't know, you know, was it, you know, and we are kind of leaders in building supportive housing. We're one of the few communities that have, you know, the 3 to 4 projects that we've had recently and are on the go. And do you think they'd be, you know, chomping at the bit to give us funding to support that? But it's been taking quite a while, like, you know, almost a year to get that funding secure, right? Which is kind of nerve-wracking for the social services agencies, because they got to hire people, get them trained for the place to open. So the commitment is late. I think they probably thought they would get it eventually, but
right.
It leaves a lot of uncertainty. And for me, the 3-year commitment leaves a bit of uncertainty too. So
yeah, I think there's a lot of focus on getting over the finish line of the next election, and that applies to a lot of stuff in the budget. But
moving on
to other things, I want to just address a bit the discussion from this week's meeting about the OEB decision to stop the it's complicated to explain it a few sentences, but this OEB decision to not allow Enbridge to essentially fund the expansion of natural gas infrastructure on new developments through fees to present customers. The Ontario government is working through Bill 165, which will override the OEB's decision. Council was asked this week to pass a motion to support the OEB's original decision and to ask the Ontario government not to go ahead with this. Number one is Do you think that will work? Do you think that the government will be persuaded by, again, this sort of concert of municipalities, because it's not just a Guelph thing? And how do you think sort of it went down in terms of, actually, let's deal with the first part first. Do you think it'll work? Do you think there's room for persuasion?
You know, given what we experienced with this provincial government, I doubt it. That doesn't mean we shouldn't say something, right? So from my perspective, I don't know that they will. They want to override it. They're talking about disbanding the board or getting rid of the chair. And it sort of reminds me of the Greenbelt advisory committee, where they got rid of people and replaced them with, people and spouses of people that are major landowners in Greenbelt country. So it's sort of, it's sort of reminiscence of that. If they don't like what they hear, they'll just override it. And it sort of undermines democracy in a lot of ways. I mean, you have those independent regulatory bodies. This is more of a regulatory body than the Greenbelt one was, but still, it's a regulatory body. It sounds like they did their due diligence. They spent a year studying this, as Councillor Cronin was said, and then they want to override it. I mean, it's I think it is time to stop. There's a transition thing that has to happen, and part of that is stopping the subsidy of oil and gas. Not that it's not a ban.
Yeah.
Everybody was talking about it like it was some kind of a ban, or other people. It's not a ban. It's just we're not going to subsidize it anymore. More subsidies should go into cleaner energy. So, and that's going to take a transition. And I think that's what the OEB was looking at.
Mm-hmm. It wasn't a unanimous vote. And I don't want to ask you to get into the heads of the councillors and the mayor who voted against it, but just, I sense that there is sometimes some hesitancy to get involved with like these purely political matters. But on the other hand, the mayor said, I don't want to weigh in on something that's under appeal. Well, the mayor's weighed in on stuff that's under appeal, right? It's, there doesn't seem to be a whole lot of consistency.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. He said he didn't know enough about it or while it was under appeal. Certainly Leanne provided a lot of information, not enough to give him comfort or, and I have to say this respectfully, but it's a way of riding both sides of the fence to say something like that, right?
So right.
He did admit that, the regulatory body was important and that they shouldn't be messing around with those recommendations.
Mm-hmm.
You'd admit that. Yeah.
All right. Well, let's move. Sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to say, so we may not know much about it and not completely understand it all, but certainly the OEB, who studied it for a year, do. And that was their recommendation with their experts.
Mm-hmm. I want to address another recent thing from the council meeting last week. This whole question it was about the update to the demolition bylaw, but it swung, and I like when this happens, it swings into like a tangential issue, but like demolition by neglect. And that is a way of sort of getting into the vacancy tax, because I feel like there's this friction in the community. And I mentioned this in one of the market squares, that a lot of people know that house in their neighborhood that nobody's lived in for years. And that house is in every neighborhood. People are wondering, like, don't we have a housing crisis? Why isn't somebody living there? And I guess, again, this is getting into like a sense of reticence I have this time on the part of staff. I think that staff aren't sure what they're going to get from the investigation of a vacancy tax, or they know what they're going to get and they don't want to say because reasons. I don't know. But I'm just, from your point of view, is it not worth it to just do the work, to like lay it to rest once and for all? Is a vacancy tax worth it, or is it not worth it?
Well, I think staff are looking at it purely as a cost benefit, right? I think they're sort of looking at it. It's going to cost us more to investigate and deal with all the administrative issues of this vacancy tax than we're going to get from it, because Guelph doesn't have some of the same things that other places have. And a lot of those houses, like I would say the ones probably on Fountain, I think, are sitting there waiting for development applications to get processed and whatnot.
For sure.
So I think, you know, there's some rationale why they're empty. And so I think that's their rationale. And I think some of us are feeling, well, that's what staff are saying. And then there's this other view, well, could it be providing housing? Should houses like that, you know, be kept in enough, good enough conditions so that they're not condemned until they actually have an application in, right? Should they, once they have an application in, then you could maybe let it go. But before that, just on speculation, I could see us sort of insisting that something be kept in enough condition that they can, good enough condition that they can rent it out. And that doesn't always, unless there's structural issues, that doesn't right. always cost a lot of money. So I suspect we haven't seen the end of this. There's a lot of interest in the community. And, you know, there was something in the budget yesterday about it. Intergovernmental Affairs, they said they're expanding the powers for municipalities on vacancy taxes. And I don't know what right. that means. So right. we'll see what that means. And so that might bring it back too. So it's not that I'm opposed to it. I'm sort of listening to what staff are saying and trying to think about that demolition by neglect part. Well, certainly that can happen while they have an application in, but we have other places where, you know, we're just not collecting any taxes. And they still use services.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, certainly, I mean, there's fire protection, police protection, all of those things. So they are still using the services in the city. Of course, there's nobody there living there doing rec centers or anything, but
right.
there's other services that they're having access to.
Well, there was that instance, I think it was last month or it was earlier this month, where there was a fire at a vacant building that somebody was squatting in or some buddies were squatting in. So, I mean, even if a property is...
In Guelph?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I think it was in the South End somewhere. So,
oh, maybe.
To your point, that was a case where they were using fire service and nobody
yeah,
was...
Yeah, exactly, right? So, that was an expensive, right?
Yeah. Well, I think what I'm getting at, though, is like there seems to be a logical inconsistency when we have opportunities come up to review services to see if we're getting bang for our buck. We jump on it. You know, I think the mayor, I'm not quoting him here, but I think the mayor's attitude towards housing has been even the addition of one housing is worth sort one yeah. house is worth. And I just like, well, these buildings are there. They can be doing something for us. And, you know, whether that's economically getting fees for because a house is vacant or by putting somebody there to live there. And if doing like if every penny counts, if every house counts, does that not?
Then those should count, too.
Right.
Yeah. I like the idea Susan brought forward, Susan Watson, about a registry.
Yes.
So that they're inspected every year. I think that and then if they're vacant, you know, then that also keeps property standards issue in place as well while they're vacant. So that may be the next step.
Right.
And then step up into the tax itself.
Okay.
Yeah.
This kind of goes along with demolition by neglect or hopefully to avoid neglect. But I wanted to address your role as an ex officio member of Heritage Guelph. It's March or it's almost the end of March. Which means we have 9 months to register as much heritage as we can before anything listed is delisted by fiat of Bill 23. So, how are you feeling about the commitment? I guess as sort of sand runs through the hourglass.
Yeah, I mean it's you know I'm sad on one part because we were able to, you know, we're not going to be able to designate all the houses that need to be designated. And it just feels like we're rushing through them right now. So Heritage Guelph picked another 20 properties to prioritize. The one positive thing was that, you know, we're working on three heritage districts, the downtown, the Ward West, and the OR. And I don't think those would have been pushed like I brought forward the motion from the from the surplus last year, right, to put another $500,000 into Heritage so that we could move forward with the third. We unpause Ward West Heritage District, and it's a lot more efficient to do a whole district than try to designate individual properties in there. But, you know, there's still parts of the downtown those boundaries aren't going to cover. And so it's disappointing. I think we're probably, you know, a year and a bit out from discovering what the consequences of that decision of the province is. Municipalities cannot possibly do all the work that needs to be done on this file, so on Heritage. So it's very sad, actually. At the same time, our staff are working as hard as they can on designations.
Are you implying that maybe this is a sense you have or a suspicion you have that maybe some people are waiting to run out the clock and hoping that Heritage Guelph doesn't notice them before December 31st?
No. And I think we'll be going out to the public, but I think that's going to be what happens, though, right? I think there are certainly areas in the city, like, you know, say Exhibition Park or St. George's, have some significant houses or our neighborhoods that could be a heritage district that are, you know, they're just not going to make it, and we're going to get demolition, and we're going to have requests, and we won't have anything to stand on. We can't now say, oh, well, we want to designate that. It's too late. It's not on the registry. We have no registry. It's gone, right? So
the Exhibition Park area, as you mentioned, I know it's not officially your neck of the woods, but I mean, that is interesting because there are a lot of really old properties there. And I think our focus has been drawn, just from my observation of Heritage Guelph, focus has been drawn to downtown Ward, sort of like the outskirts or what used to be the outskirts of Guelph. We've kind of been avoiding that center of town, like not on purpose, but it's just sort of incidentally.
Yeah, it's on the list. So they go they've gone to where the risks are. So the risk is in Ward West. Some could, because of a lot of change, a lot of the types of properties, you're probably not going to see that. Exhibition Park is fairly dense, stately homes. You know, is the downtown really at risk of those buildings? I'm not sure. You know, one area that we're not getting to that probably is at risk, if you look at that Dublin, west of Gordon in that Dublin Street, Essex Fountain, all the way back, you know, there's a lot of older, smaller, that's one of the oldest parts of Guelph, a lot of older, smaller homes there. So that's,
old working class neighborhoods.
Well,
that's kind of a downer, but no pun sure intended. But I think
our staff are doing as well as we could, and I'm was thankful that we got the $500,000 to do even more. So
I don't think that's a mark against the sort of Heritage staff. I think they're trying to do as much as they humanly can. But there's only 40 hours in a work week.
I mentioned the library, 13.5 million.
I think a lot of people are going to be glad about that. That goes into like the whole thing with the, albeit with the feds instead of the province, but we were like asking forever for that money for the supportive housing. We were asking forever for that money to help
the library.
And then, you know, somebody finally heard us, it seems.
Yeah. But libraries rarely get funding like that. 13.5 million is no small change. And I haven't heard of many municipalities across the country that's for a library that has gotten that kind of funding. So I'm pretty excited about that.
No, that is kind of unusual. But that's good news. And we don't do good news here. But
I know. I said we had to bring some joy to them.
Fair enough. Maybe to wrap up, I want to kind of look ahead a bit. And I think this is probably going to end up on the council radar sooner rather than later, but I've been following the Accessibility Advisory Committee. They've been talking about, I mean, I know it's 2.5 years away, but the 2026 municipal election. from, I have not been told this by anyone, but I think there's going to be a real push on when they meet later this month or later in April, that they're going to insist that internet voting be an option the next election. They feel very strongly that is, that offers the best option for their own independence and peace of mind and ability to use their assistive devices. What are your thoughts, I guess, you know, about what internet voting in Guelph might look like, or if it might be on the menu at all for 2026?
Well, you know, I supported it years ago when it came, and I supported it specifically for an accessibility reason. And, you know, I do work for Elections Ontario and Elections Canada, so I know, I understand how important
you're the elections expert. That's why I asked
how the election, how it's difficult. I think, you know, well, Lorelei Root came up with she brought to us a different type of internet voting that people could use. And I'm hoping that staff come back with that. So you'd have to, you might have to register for it. I'm not sure, but see, that in itself becomes problematic, because accessibility under a human rights thing, they shouldn't have to do something special like that in order to register to vote. They should be able to go and do that. So, you know, Stephen, who supported it before, our city clerk, who, you know, he came back cool to it this time, given the problems that we're having with security everywhere, municipalities, the cyber attacks and things like that. So, you know, I'm gonna hold off saying I'd like to find some kind of internet solution, like the one Lorelei was bringing forward. Whether it'll be the full internet voting or not, I don't know. So far, municipalities haven't experienced any problems. I mean, the one that was there, I think the election before last in Cambridge, wasn't to do with an internet problem, but security, it was a glitch in the machinery, which you can get it in any election. So I'm cautious. I mean, I'd love to be able to support internet voting, to be perfectly honest. I really would. There's just a number of caveats there now.
Right. At the very least, we will not have to worry about the MPAC voting list anymore. It's going to be the Elections Ontario voting list. So that's one hurdle cleared.
That'll be a lot better. That their list is a lot cleaner, that's for sure.
All right. Well, the opinions expressed today have been very clean and clear. So, Kathy Danner, thank you so much for your time today.
Thanks. Goodbye.
Okay, and once again, that was Kathy Downer, Ward 5 City Councilor, and it was nice to have a chat with her again. I look forward to chatting with all the other councilors as we go around the table again, and hopefully we will have less Downer material for you in the future.
And we'll make it a full horseshoe year, right? Isn't that the goal?
Oh, yeah. We're really going to cater to this idea that maybe this can be a utopia. We're gonna Guthrie it out there and pull a full Gibson, and it's not really a lot of pun opportunities with the councillor names.
Pay the Piper, formerly.
Oh my goodness, yes. Yeah, we're going to workshop some stuff. That's it for this week's show. We hope you liked it. If you want to listen to us again, you can download it every Monday from our website at opensourcesguelph.com or at the Guelph Politicast channel on Podbean, or you can get us through your favorite podcast app like Apple, Google, TuneIn, and Spotify. You can find us on social media, on Facebook at Open Sources Newswire and on Twitter at OS_Guelph. I'll be back here on CFRU Wednesday at 3 p.m. for the movie review show that I co-host called End Credits, and you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Adam A. Donaldson, or at my news and politics site at guelphpolitico.ca.
And I'm Scotty Hertz on Facebook, Twitter, and Blue Sky. And if you're joining us at our regular time at 5 o'clock on a Thursday, please stay tuned for the Volunteer Playlist.
Yes, that is one of the many great programs that you'll hear on this station, CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. As for this show, we'll return next Thursday at 5 p.m. for another edition of Open Sources, and we will see you then.